Blog Talk Radio.
Another great show brought to you by the Law of Attraction Radio Network. The Think, Believe, and Manifest Show with author, master trainer, and certified dream coach, Constance Arnold. Join us every week as we bring you life-changing information that will empower your life. And here's Constance.
Well, hello there, everyone, and welcome to the Law of Attraction Radio Network. And I am Constance Arnold, your host for the Think, Believe, and Manifest Talk Show. And, of course, I'm coming to you live with lots of love, but just a little bit of southern flavor from a little cloudy and rainy Atlanta, Georgia, but it's still a beautiful day here. Well, I just want to thank all of you for joining me today, and I pray whether you're on the East Coast or the West Coast, wherever you are, that you are creating for yourself a spectacular and abundant day. Well, how are you doing? How has your life been? Have you been receiving any manifestations in your life this week? Well, we're going to be talking about that later on. We have our very special guest today, Dr. Lisa Love, who I'm really, really excited about. She's the author of 4 books. We're going to be talking about love, attraction, and money today. Well, before we talk to Dr. Lisa Love, I want to thank all of those people who are sending me those wonderful, encouraging emails. One very interesting one that I want to share with you was from one of my listeners who stated that the one thing that has really helped him is that he realized that the missing piece of his puzzle was that he did not have enough clarity and detail for those things which he was desiring. He had been listening to the show every week, and the one thing that really resonated with him was that he was too vague about his goals and desires. Now, isn't that great? He received the knowledge and information that he was looking for, and once he begins to take small baby steps, as I always say, and to begin to apply that knowledge, then things will gradually begin to change for him. So thank you once again for sending me your wonderful, encouraging emails, and keep them coming. Also, just shifting a little bit, I want to share with our listeners that the Law of Attraction Radio Network is sponsoring a Law of Attraction cruise. Doesn't that sound great? Cruise to Transformation, November the 6th through the 9th, 2009. 3 glorious nights with your favorite Law of Attraction hosts, and they're going to be conducting empowering workshops during the cruise. Unfortunately, I cannot go because I have a prior appointment that I cannot change. And that cruise will be leaving the port of San Diego to Mexico. And so can you imagine just being on the ship with like-minded people? You can snorkel. You can lie out in the sun and have fun while you're being changed and empowered. And so it would include 10 workshops featuring the fantastic Law of Attraction host on this radio network. And the cost is $550 per person. We want to make it easy and affordable for you so you can make easy payments. So do something special for yourself. Just shoot me a quick email, constance@fulfillingyourpurpose.com, and I can give you more information about that wonderful transformation cruise. Well, let me remind you about some of my upcoming guests for the remainder of July. On July 19th, we have Phil Harris, author of Jesus Taught It Too, The Early Roots of the Law of Attraction. And on July 26th, Tulane Medainer, author, Secret Laws of Attraction and Coach Yourself to Success. So we just have wonderful guests for you. Just listen every week. Download the program and listen to it again and again. Today I'm opening up the chat room just in case you have questions for Dr. Lisa Love. You can just type them in and I will read them to her. And if you want to call in and ask Dr. Lisa Love a question, that call-in number is 347-326-9837. Well, let me introduce my special guest for today, Dr. Lisa Love. She is the author of 4 books. Soul Success, How to Create Joy and Prosperity in Good Times or Bad. Second book, Beyond the Secret, Spiritual Power and the Law of Attraction. Her third book is Attracting Real Love, 5 Simple Steps for Getting the Love That You Want. And her last book is Meditation, The Path to Peace. She is a Law of Attraction, Love, Relationship, and Transformational Coach. She has earned 5 college degrees and has 25 years experience as a counselor and a coach. And I've talked to her behind the scenes, and she is just a passionate, loving, caring woman who feels that she's called by God to change the world. Dr. Lisa Love, welcome to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Well, thank you. That was a wonderful, warm introduction, and hello to all our listeners as well. Thank you for taking your time to join us.
Well, how are you doing today, Lisa?
I'm in San Diego, where all your listeners are going to come have a great cruise, enjoying the most beautiful weather.
Oh, is it beautiful? It's I don't know if you can hear, but it's thundering just a little bit in the background here. So you're in San Diego, is that right?
Yes, I am, and it was one of those days where you woke up and the sun was shining, and I had to get up early and take a beautiful walk on the beach. So I felt very blessed to have such a beautiful way to start my day, and I've been having a great day ever since.
Well, good. Let's get started. I have so many questions to ask you. You've authored 4 books. That's just phenomenal. Well, you know, everybody is buzzing and talking about the Law of Attraction, and let's talk about your first book, Beyond the Secret, Spiritual Law and the Law of Attraction. First of all, to you, what is the Law of Attraction in its simplest forms and terms?
The law of attraction is a neutral law that can be used by anybody, and it basically says it is used by everybody, actually. What we think and what we feel, we tend to attract. Another way I put it is we attract where we vibrate at. In other words, whatever is the level of our consciousness or our awareness, we tend to attract events into our life to either lift us into a higher level of awareness or to have us deal with the karmic consequences of whatever it is we set into motion through those thoughts and feelings.
Okay. So why did you write the book Beyond the Secret? Did you feel that there was a need for more information beyond the secret? And what do you mean by spiritual power?
The book Beyond the Secret, the notes for that book were actually written 10 years before the book came out in 2007. So when the book The Secret came out, which was very, very popular, I had already spent a long time wrestling with some of the ideas as popularly presented in terms of the law of attraction. I had been trained, well, I first learned about the concept, we called it energy follows thought, in the early 1980s. I'd been trained in a lot of those teachings through, I was raised Christian, but also through the New Thought movement, and at the same time, I was trained as a law of attraction teacher around 2000 by Michael Ozier, a wonderful human being who wrote the book Law of Attraction. But I always had some difficulties with the way it was presented because I didn't feel it was inclusive enough, encompassing enough, and understanding enough of deeper levels of spirituality. And so I wrote the book Beyond the Secret. And the story of how that book came about is really fascinating, because I wrote it as a free ebook I was going to send out to my clients, and it was a short version of the book that is, and I had a woman who was getting ready to do a law of attraction conference, and she said, well, tell me how come your approach is different. And I said, why don't you just take a look at this ebook? I had just finished it. Lo and behold, I had no idea she was an agent. I had no idea she was, you know, connected with a number of publishing companies. And so I sent her the ebook on Thursday. Friday, she said, can I be your agent? Saturday, she flew off to New York. Monday, I had a book deal.
Amazing.
Amazing. Wow, that's like a magical law of attraction story.
Right. And so what principles in your book can you share with our listeners that you feel are possibly missing ingredients as to why people may not be manifesting in their lives like they really say that they are desiring to do so?
The major lesson in my book is that we are all spirit. And the more spiritually realized we become, the more we realize that we are connected to everything and everyone around us. And so the wrestling that happened in my life is, how do I attract not just from myself, but from my higher purpose, from my whatever God is spiritually calling me to? How do I attract for the good of everybody and not just myself? And that is a spiritual question. And it's in my book, the first questions we need to ask are along those lines, because we can selfishly attract things. We can unselfishly attract things. Most of us attract in a mixture, so do I, to be quite honest. And so I said, before we just, you know, ask for a beach house, that's because I had money in one relationship. I write about that and Beyond the Secret. I had quite a bit of money. And yet I had just come out as a counselor working with inner city Los Angeles gang kids, homeless people. And here I was looking at all these empty homes in Palm Springs where our second home was on the golf course and thinking to myself, why is it that some people have so much abundance in the world and so many people have nothing? And so I was really wrestling. And to be honest, I still am learning to understand, how do we live in abundance and harmony for all? And if I am truly spirit, how do I attract an abundance and harmony for all? Especially when they estimate today that between 1 to 10% of the world's population, that's only 6.6 million or 66 million people, have 90% of the world's wealth, resources, and property.
And that, so why do you think that is, Lisa? Because people will say, I've worked for that money, I believe for that money, and if the people who don't have the money or the resources or the abundance, all they need to do is work the law of attraction and things will happen for them.
There is some truth to that and not. So here's the part that is true. Yes, if you put your focus on abundance, if you make the main thing that you want to attract into your life is money, and money is power. For good or evil, it's power. And the law of attraction is neutral. When you rub that lamp and the genie called the law of attraction genie comes out, it doesn't ask what kind of person you are. It just is forced to give you what you want. But the problem is we are heading into a place in humanity's history we have never been in before. We are truly interconnected globally. And we've always had this idea that the people with money, I spent 5 years studying this for my PhD dissertation, historically people with money, the wealthiest people in the world historically now, et cetera. There has been an attitude of, God gave me my money, I'm entitled to my money, I worked hard for my money, Darwinism, you know, I deserve it, it's mine. They didn't work for it, or they didn't know how to use the law of attraction right, or they didn't attract it right, too bad for them. I deserve all this abundance. Yay for me. There is some truth to that. But with money and power also comes tremendous responsibility. And if you live in a spiritually insulated world where you're thinking you're doing a lot of good, but you're not wanting to know the problems of the people in the world, you're not wanting to know anything about the suffering out there, you're not wanting to know about racism or slavery, which is more rampant worldwide than ever before, or genocide or any of these problems that are going on, then you are living in a land of spiritual delusion. And I've studied many major religions, and they point to that fact.
Well, Lisa, you can have the beach house on the beach with all the finer things in life and still be very philanthropic and in touch with what's going on in the world. Is that right?
That is exactly right. And it's not whether you have money or don't have money. That's what I realized. It's the consciousness that drives it. So I have a fun saying, do me a favor. If you are truly oriented towards service in the world, and I'm noticing more and more people are, then may you not only have a million, may you have a billion or more. Bill Gates and his wife, Melinda Gates, are actually a very good example of it, and Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett is now coming on board, and those are two of the richest people in the world. But if you are somebody that is going to be very, very selfish and self-centered with the money, and you're not going to use it to become more spiritual and more of a loving human being, then do me a favor. Try not to attract $1 million. We don't need that in the world anymore.
Right. And I'm a big proponent of really attracting your purpose and destiny and living that out and walking that out and fulfilling that. And certainly what comes with that would be material things to empower you to be able to really touch the lives of, you know, all kinds of people from all over the world. Let's talk about love. What's love got to do with it? On your website, you said that the number one cause for happiness is having plenty of long-term loving relationships. So share a little information about your other book, Attracting Real Love and Keeping It Once and For All. How does a person track real love, and how do they keep it?
Well, see, what's very interesting is what's happened to too many of us as we've been taught by the law of attraction is we think that what we need to attract is money and that will make us happy. But they did research in 2008 after my book came out worldwide, and they discovered in studying 26 different countries around the world, some of the most impoverished countries and the richest countries, they were wondering, well, what really does make people happy?
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, what it was long-term, loving, lasting relationships. And the country that they studied that actually was the happiest was Indonesia, which doesn't mean you have to be poor, but there's something about that country was one of the poorest on the list, but the people there, according to the happiness scales and interview questions they had, reported being much more happy. And the country that came in second to the bottom of the list of the 26 was the United States.
Okay.
Because they were finding, even though we've attracted more material abundance than any other country, almost any other country on the planet, we are having increased disruption of relationships. So where people are feeling increasingly lonely, abandoned, you know, parents aren't even raising their children, we're all working three jobs and barely even making enough for survival, et cetera, et cetera. And some of that goes back to the fact that we have bought into the idea, worldwide, we bought into the idea that the people with money deserved their money and the rest of us didn't.
Right.
And yet we can break out of that by saying all of us deserve our basic needs met. All of us deserve that. And then insisting that we get it, basic needs for health care, which we see that coming along. It's fascinating.
Right.
So,
but real love, how does a person attract love into their life? Because love is as important as air, the air we breathe. So if a person right now may have gone through a divorce or may they just may want a partner, how does that person begin to do that? And what role does loving yourself have to do with attracting more love? Do you have any steps that you can share with our listeners? Okay.
Yes, I do. And the first step is to begin to understand what love really is. Because we have been saturated with messages that say, just listen to the songs, the movies, the TV programs. They indicate things that really, they call them love, but they're not love. We think love means you're suffering. I firmly believe and am committed to the idea that love heals. It doesn't hurt. If something is hurting you in life, then don't call it love. If you're listening to songs that, you know, love hurts, et cetera, turn it off and say, boy, that is not true. The lack of love, I lack love, I-L-L, is what makes us ill.
Okay.
The lack of love. Another example, people will think that abuse is love. I'm doing this for your own good. You know, I grew up with that. How many of us grew up with that? That is not loving somebody by abusing somebody. That's called, I don't know how to love. I'm too frustrated to know how to love. And so I'm just frustrated, and so I'm going to do this to try and control you because I don't know how to love. Love is not codependency. Sticking in a relationship and suffering on and on and on and never getting your needs met because you're too afraid to go out and really find love, to really say, I deserve to be loved. So there's other things that I describe, but this is the most important step. Know what love is and refuse to call the rest of it love. Instead, understand, oh my God, that's not love. I want love. Where is it? And then you'll be able to attract it because you'll know what it is specifically. You'll know how to find it.
And so with a person who has a great positive image about love and who they are, should they begin to write down characteristics of the kind of lover that they want to attract into their lives and to begin to think on that? They need to be those things and think on those things. Is that how they begin to attract love into their lives for a person who really has sort of put the other negative kind of relationships behind them but really has a clear picture of what they want? What would they need to do to begin to attract love in their lives?
Very much what you say. We begin to identify the qualities that are associated with love. Kindness, wisdom, insight, empathy, knowing how to communicate in a way that is as harmless as we can make it. We're going to lose our cool sometimes.
We do.
Committed, faithful. Even if we don't stay together, we know how to end it in a respectful, loving way. Sacrificing, not sacrificing to where now I'm some empty blob that can't exist in life, but sacrificing because we know that there's a joy in giving to the people around us. And the more we understand that, and the more we say it's happening in my life more and more, I will attract and stand in the presence of real love. The more I use the law of repulse, because with every positive pole, there's a negative pole, to repel, to push away from me that which isn't love. And I'm able to source more and more, and I really am able to do this more and more in my life, what love really is. And then I'm continually learning how to fill myself with love so that I have the love that I need to offer others. And love is the great attractor. It is what brings us the most happiness, joy, and bliss. And then I have more and more of that in my life.
And so if a person is really loving themselves at a deep subconscious level, they will attract love to them. I'm reading something from our chat room, and one lady says that, I feel that I'm really loving myself from a deep level, but I still have not attracted the love of my life to me. What should I do? Should I begin visualizing? Should I begin speaking out loud that I have love in my life now? What are some steps that I can take to manifest love in my life?
One of the great tricks you can use is begin to imagine as if the great love of your life was already there. What would he or she be saying to you? What would the two of you be doing together? You know, children have wonderful imaginations. I have a son who's just outgrowing the imagination phase a little more. But, you know, and we try and tell him to stop imagining. And yet imagining, pretending as if, is a powerful way to attract, to lift your vibration, and to prepare yourself for it. And even to put yourself into the state of saying, whether I have a physically present lover or not, it doesn't mean that I can't have the lover in my life, a divine lover in my life. And so if we act as if that lover is present, we fill ourselves up with the feeling that love is here, and then we're much more vibrant, happy, attractive, the greatest. I was a Match.com dating advisor for a while, too, and I tell you, the greatest, most powerfully attractive thing is a confident, happy, loving person.
That is so true. That is so true. So that's what that person can begin to do. Somebody else, before we get to your third book, says, I understand about money, but right now I've just lost my job, and so what can I begin to do to attract more money into my life? I am married with two children. So what can a person do, Lisa, who has lost their job, begin to do subconsciously to begin to bring money into their lives?
One of the things to not do first is avoid and deny. The faster you can realize, oh my gosh, we're having these problems, the more you can start to take the steps you need to take to safeguard and protect yourself. Practical examples, and as we'll probably share later in the show, I myself have been through this in my life a few times, and again recently. Reach out to social services if they're available. Reach out to friends. Pride is your enemy right now. It is your enemy. Reach out to friends. Let people know you need help. Face your bills and whatever it is that's going on with your bills as quickly as possible. Instead of, a lot of people have been avoiding them. They've been leaving them in the mailbox. They don't want to open it. You know, I know that feeling, but the faster you can say, okay, we need to face our bills. Look over the things where you can immediately, you know, all those, I did this, all these little expenses that were being debited out of my account because I'd signed up for these little internet things, et cetera. I saved $65 one month just by realizing I had all these little $10 debits here, $15 debits there. You know, soup is popular if you have to go that low. I've been that low in my life. Hot dogs, soup, I'm a veggie person, so veggie dogs. But anyway, so, you know, start to realize that there's nothing bad about economizing, so that you can prepare to organize and reattract. What's going on? What happened in my life is a lot of us are having these kinds of meltdowns because we're having to shift to a whole new way of being. So instead of saying, shame on me, oh my God, I'm in this horrible financial problem, which may not have been your thoughts, your fault, except for maybe some naivete, et cetera. Instead say, okay, it's happening. Now how can I deal with it as quickly as possible, as efficiently as possible, so that I can begin to rebuild and get moving again, get the energy to get moving again.
So once they assess their problem, Lisa, they should not focus in on the problems because that's going to keep more of the problem coming to them. After the problems have been assessed and they've come up with solutions that they know of, don't they need to shift their thinking to abundance and all of my needs being met and doors being opened for me so that that can come into their lives?
Yes, and one of the ways that often happens, especially right now, is getting ready for possibly new ways of needs being met, new ways of doors being open. So, you know, like the people that have lost their jobs in the automobile industry, you know, it may not be realistic to continue to think you're going to get that same kind of job. Stay, number one, stay open to inspiration.
Right.
Meditate and just kind of, you know, show me where I need to go now. Let me know, you know, do I need to retrain? So many people are starting to not even use money. They're opening back up to the trade system to get all kinds of their needs met. So maybe it's the old forms of the way abundance is met and comes to you, but there might be lots of new ways that you're going to connect, build community, discover, innovate. We're in a tremendously entrepreneurial, it's a great time to be an entrepreneur, re-educate yourself, retrain, rethink. So that may be part of it instead of just thinking the same old way, which for some people it may happen.
Well, you know, I'm a prime example of that because I bartered to get a chef, and she's probably listening. Hi, Shelley. And so what I did was I put an ad with barter coaching for a personal chef. And so I met the person, and so what I'm doing now is coaching her to get on the Food Network, and she's my chef. And so isn't that interesting? No money was exchanged, but still I'm living abundantly in that area. So that's a great idea, Lisa, for people to begin to shift their thinking as to how wealth and prosperity and increase can come to them.
Yes, because if you don't have any money, it doesn't mean that you don't have skills. It doesn't mean that, you know, maybe one of the things that you really need to get abundance is a greater support network. Maybe that's part of what's keeping the money from flowing once you've lost your job. So get a great support network and, you know, get a group of people together and say, wow, you know, what can we trade? What kind of different services can we do just to trade here? I mean, you could have almost everything met immediately. If it, you know, so you've got some doctor skills to trade for the food skills to trade for the grocery skills to trade for the, you know, educational skills. So that is actually a way that I'm learning that people are starting to reach out and get their needs met. We don't need the banking system to approve that it's okay for us to get our needs met. We can find other ways. We can attract other ways. And so there's some suggestions.
And somebody said that people are our greatest resource, and I really believe that. I had an experience just this week. Went to a meeting, didn't really want to go to a meeting, just sat next to some people, sat next to one guy, and he said to me, what do you do? And I shared with him what I did, and I told him, I said, well, I'm a talk show host. And he said, how interesting. He said, who is the one person that you would like to have on your talk show? And I gave him that name, which I can't reveal that name now. And he pulled out his phone and dialed that person.
Wow.
And this
That's
person.
Beautiful.
This person, nobody can get him on the talk show, but this particular person knows the person and is trying to get him on my talk show. That's an example of wealth exchange.
Right.
Within people resource. And so that's a prime example of what you just said, that one way to have wealth is just to have more people in your life because people are the greatest resource.
Right.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your book, Soul Success. And I know that that differs a lot from Beyond the Secret, your first book. And in this book, you share your story. So briefly share with our listeners your story and how you went through the tough times and what is the lesson and the messages that you can share with them about what you learned during that time?
Well, it began not too long after 9/11 and then the Iraq war starting, because there was $3 million worth of venture capital that was promised to the company that my husband was starting up at the time. And that money froze up suddenly, and we were promised it, we were getting ready to collect on it, and suddenly we didn't get it. Now, he had a really good income, but then suddenly that income disappeared, and it just catapulted into a series of events. Some of it, I know, was related to whatever was going through with my husband at the time, where he ended up chronically unemployed, to the point where we ended up going from a six-figure income to having to let our house in the San Francisco Bay Area, it's not cheap to live up there, go as a short sale. To me then, as things still kept falling apart, to me renting out rooms in a four-bedroom house that I was renting, to me, he just gave up. My house gave out, then he gave up and didn't even work for a year and a half, to me, getting down to the point where I was with my son in a welfare line, seeing what I could qualify for, and discovering that welfare in California was $400 a month for a mother and a child in a state where the rent to just put a roof over our head cost $1,000 a month. I mean, to me, it was just like such a joke when these people talk about welfare mothers getting rich.
So let me say, you are a published author, and you had to go and apply for welfare.
I was not yet published. But I did have my degree, and I was a psychologist. And interestingly enough, I mean, I was desperately looking for work. And while I was looking for work, the message I kept getting is either there was no jobs or I was overqualified. So my education was actually becoming a liability. So out of frustration, what is going on here in my life? The book The Secret came out, and I had studied the law of attraction, worked with it, and successfully. I'd attracted lots of things in my life. But for 20, 25 years, you know, I'd worked with it, and now all of a sudden my life was completely falling apart. And I was saying, what is going on here? And I wrote the first book, Beyond the Secret, in the middle of that crisis. And I already mentioned on this radio show how that magically, really seemed like magic, got picked up. And from that, I started a message, which became the book Soul Success, based on my knowledge of how wealth is horribly not distributed fairly on this planet, and it can't be sustained anymore, and said, why is that? It's because for too long we've been promoting, especially in the last 20, 30 years, a notion of success that is ego-driven. I am successful when I have enough money in the bank, which I've met people with millions of dollars in the bank right now. They're still millions of dollars in the bank, and they feel broken. They're afraid of the economy.
Right.
So, you know, it's relative what people think is enough. But we're not successful until we have enough money, until we're in perfect health, until we have the good-looking lover in our lives. And, you know, it's like, and that's kind of what the secret, one of the things I didn't like about it. It makes it seem as if we're finally okay when we've attracted A, B, C, D, E. And if we don't have that, something's wrong with us. You didn't use the law of attraction correctly. Shame on you. And yet there are an infinity number of examples of good, decent, loving human beings who are more focused perhaps on I was a mother to my son. So even though I had my education, I set aside my career for a while so I could be the one to raise my son.
And so that's wealth. That's wealth. To set aside your career to take care of your son, that is wealth. And so, Lisa, since the law of attraction is a law, and the law is something that works for anybody who are working, and it works every time, during the time that you were really going through this really difficult time, were your thoughts negative? Were you in fear? Were you using the law of attraction, the law of responsibility? Truthfully, what were you doing? Share with our listeners.
Well, you know, one of the things I realize is when you are changing into a butterfly, a caterpillar, first of all, goes into a cocoon. So I went into a cocoon to try and figure out what is going on. My life got radically simplified. My needs got radically simplified. And the second thing that happens to a caterpillar inside the cocoon is it turns into a pile of goo. And so I became a pile of goo. And all the feelings that I write about in Soul Success and How to Deal with Them, and I wrote about in Chapter 7 and Beyond the Secret, are appropriate. I felt fear. I felt anger. I was confused. I felt sorrow. I don't really feel jealousy, so I didn't really feel that one, but I mention it in my book.
Right.
You know, so I had all the gamut of feelings that we're all going to have whenever we go through things. And because things have been so sudden, so shocking, and there were so many sustained losses all of a sudden that I had to take, it was a while to rebuild. But the wonderful thing is, while you're in the pile of goo, that caterpillar is actually in, they discovered that the elements there are hallucinogenic. It is a time to recreate and revisualize your life. What I was doing with Soul Success, as well as Beyond the Secret, was not just revisualizing my life, but attempting to set forward a new vision of the kind of life we can live on this planet, where we see primary wealth. There's secondary wealth, which is money. Primary wealth is what they discovered in 2008 makes for happiness. Long-lasting, loving relationships. If we were spending as much money on this planet in discovering how to get along with each other, how to understand each other, how to have more empathy for each other, if we were investing more in relationships, we spend more, we pay lawyers $300 to $400 an hour to basically stir up the pot to help us be antagonistic so that we'll destroy our families. The average divorce in California costs $25,000 to $30,000 of somebody's wealth.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That same money, for that same amount of money, that same couple could go to weekly counseling for 10 years. But we've created a society where we're not valuing what research is showing, what humanity throughout history basically knows, makes us happy. We want to be happy, but what makes us happy is feeling loved.
Okay, but the bottom line is that people have to take personal responsibility, even though the society has created it. We have to say that that no longer works for me. I'm going to shift my consciousness, and I'm going to change. And it sounds like that's what you did.
Yes. Yes, and I had picked relationships that were based on wounds that I had as a childhood, which we all do, that didn't really work, that weren't really supporting me. So one of the things I did in my cocoon phase is I signed off relationships for a while and said, I'm going to get real clear on what love is. I'm going to really take time to love myself. I mean, I signed off on like an intimate relationship. I actually expanded. I have more friends and more loving people in my life than I've ever had in my life now. But I still don't have a one-on-one intimate relationship at this point. But, you know, I was really shifting and saying, I would rather love myself. I would rather want to really know what love is. I'd rather get to this new level of vibration and really lock myself in there and then be able to attract at that level, instead of going to panic or fear mode or think, oh, I got to use the law of attraction to get myself out of this mess I'm in so I can go back and be the same old caterpillar I was. I didn't want to be the same old caterpillar. We learn through pleasure or pain. I'd had enough pain that I said, you know what, God give me wings.
Right. I agree with you. And so for a person who is going through a difficult time, you know, you have to have your own needs met before you can help somebody else and reach out to humanity. And so how can an individual begin to shift consciousness in their personal lives so that they can get their own personal lives stable and then reach out to humanity? What are some things that they can do besides change their thinking, change their believing, change their visualization? How can they shift consciousness?
I think the major way I learned, which I wrote about in Soul Success, is change your feelings.
Okay. Talk about feelings and emotions and the
right.
role that they play in manifestation. Go ahead.
And it isn't so much change your feelings as understand them and know how to work with them more effectively. You mentioned Michael Lozier. He's got this wonderful metaphor in his book, and I've used it on my website. You can see it on drlisalove.com, the Kerplunk game, the metaphor. What it is it's a tube. And you put it's a kid's game. You put marbles at the top of the tube, and the idea is to get marbles to the bottom of the tube. But the problem is they're blocked by these things called pickup sticks. This is like an affirmation. I am abundant. Money is coming to me right now. So you put the marbles in the top of it, but why is money not coming? Why? Because the pickup sticks are the feelings that are blocking it. The feelings of fear or sorrow or anger or jealousy or confusion or even happiness if you're trying to attract happiness in the wrong way, so it becomes hedonistic instead of learning how to attract what brings true happiness to your life. So I learned that the major way I was stuck is I had to learn not only how to work through all the different emotions that I had, but how to exercise more powerful muscles so that when those emotions rose, I understood the gift. And I got that gift faster in my life, and I implemented it faster so that my energy level stayed up. The Hicks talk about that a little bit too in their books, keeping the emotional vibration up. I just had a little different take in how you work with those different emotions based on my many, many years as a therapist and helping people master those feeling states.
And so if a person is trying to shift consciousness as far as having love in their life, their emotions should be one of what? Love and what else? What should they be feeling?
Well, let's say they're afraid that I'm afraid I'm never going to attract that person into my life that I really want. So part of it is a thought. It's not just a feeling. Well, then we need to work with fear. And fear is overcome through knowledge and love. And in my book, Soul Success, I use the metaphor of a guy that I once saw go rock climbing without a rope. He just scaled the face of this mountainside. I mean, it was just astonishing how he just went up so fast. And I thought to myself, A, he must have a lot of knowledge of this mountain face. He's probably climbed it lots of times with ropes. He knows it very, very well. Mm-hmm. So we need knowledge. The second thing, so we need knowledge about what kind of person do we want to attract? What's a healthy person to attract? What are my unmet needs that might make me still attract dysfunctional people that I've got to learn how to clean up and heal? So we need knowledge. The other thing then is that man, I'm sure, he's only probably in his early 20s, had so much love for rock climbing. If we really love people, if we really love ourselves and really love people and we're really sourcing love, people are going to come to us like magnets, like magnets. I'm almost 50. The idea that there are no men out there at this age, which I've had numerous women my age say, I'm like, well, that's a thought form I'm not going to buy into.
Oh,
first
no.
of all, I have tons of people, you know, interested in me. I have plenty of opportunities for men, you know, and my main thing I'm looking for is to totally love myself continually enough that I will be patient and filled with love all the time so that the right partner is perfectly attracted to me in the right time.
And you're so pretty. You're so beautiful, Lisa. On your website, you look so young. You don't look 50. You look vibrant. I think I told you that the first time that I spoke with you. And so it permeates. It comes out. I can feel it when I talk to you over the phone. So whatever you truly believe is what will happen in your life. That's right.
Right.
Okay, talk a little bit about the four levels of mind and how are they important in helping us manifest what we want.
A lot of what goes on with the law of attraction is they use what I call the motivational level of mind. And that is, you know, it's just I'm going to just pump myself up and feel motivated to get what I want. And that can work. And I've done that in my life a few times, and it did work. And sometimes I got what I wanted, and afterwards I went, uh-oh. So we have to be careful. So there are four levels of mind that I write about in my book. Intuitional, which is just when all those ideas just flow in and, you know, you're helpless and you're saying, you know, dear God, please give me an understanding. And then all these ahas and all these realizations are coming. Oh, my gosh, I could trade. Or, oh, my God, I never thought that. You know, I had a girlfriend that went out with a much younger man, and I had a limited thought form that said, oh, you know, younger men are like off limits, you know. And then I thought, well, why do I have that? You know, different races. Why do I have that? I mean, you know, you can open up the pool of love and attract all kinds of things to you. So intuitional is attracting new, fresh insights, ideas, whether it's for work or money or whatever it is. The second one is what I call the logical mind. And you had mentioned somebody said that they needed to get more detailed. Aha, I need to get more detailed. That's a logical mind. The logical approach is if I do this, then it will most likely lead to that. That's what we call science uses primarily the logical mind. And so that is the ability of saying, well, the probabilities will increase. Like if I'm looking for work, if I'm just sitting at home feeling sad, the probabilities are not high, even if I'm affirming and visualizing that a job's going to come to me, that I'm going to get a job. The probabilities will go up if I'm cleaning up my resume, if I'm putting it on a lot of websites, or, you know, I tell people, you decide what kind of job you want, and then you go learn about the company, you learn about the people that work at the company, and you interview them as much as they would interview you, because then by the time you show up, you're going to have so much passion and enthusiasm for their company. Most people hire, the resume will get you into the interview. Most people hire in the interview because they like who you are.
Right.
Plain and simple. So have that wonderful energy. By the time you show up, they're like, oh, my God, you know, and oh, this person's right for me. That's part of lots of mind. Motivational mind is just simply pumping yourself up. Instinctual mind is, well, it's based upon what you already know to be so. And you've already embodied it. You've already digested it. It's that gut reflex, that gut understanding. But that's, to me, I don't call that intuitional. Some people call that intuition, the gut. I don't call that. Intuition is fresh, new stuff. Gut is instinctual, what we already know to be so. Like a car is starting to move into my lane, I already know to hit the horn. I don't even have to think about it. I already know if maybe I have to swerve, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. So does a person have to have all four of these stages in order to manifest?
I believe that all four help us to be much more skillful manifestors. Because if, you know, here's an example of the instinctual mind that I did not pay attention to once. I paid attention to intuitional, logical, motivational. But we were on the way up to a job interview, this is a long time ago, not when things got for my husband. And it looked like everything was fantastic. You know, fantastic money, stock options, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, for some reason, as we're driving up to the interview, I had to pull over and say, I have to be sick. I was sick the entire way up. I mean, I literally had to throw up. And I couldn't understand it. And the entire time, my body was just like saying, something's wrong, something's wrong, something's wrong. But I kept trying to override it primarily with my logical and motivational mind. Oh, no, this all looks great, all looks great. Well, we got the job. We manifested it. Everything was great. 3 months later, we discovered that this company, it was a major company, was merging with another major company. And they had deliberately, people from New York City, even one guy flew out with his family, deliberately leveraged the money of the buyout by bringing in high-name people and offering them these exaggerated offers, which they got for 3 months before they were all laid off.
Oh, and so that was your intuition, that was your spirit really, just really quickening you to say, ah, there's something wrong with this.
I use that more as my instinctual mind because it was my actual body telling me, you're not listening, you're not listening, you're not listening to what's going on here. So the instinctual mind for me is it feels solid in my body. I have a body psychology training now. I learned that lesson. And so I make sure that if I have the intuition and the logic lines up, now sometimes, you know, go with the intuition, even the logic doesn't line up. But you know, if I work all four in the right way, I increase the odds of things happening and flowing in my life the right kind of way that spirit intends for me.
Okay. Well, you talk a lot about spirit and about passion and purpose and destiny. So how can people begin to move into their purpose and or destiny? How can they discover what that is? If they're working a 9-to-5, how can they kind of begin to live in their purpose and destiny? What can they do?
One of the best, especially if you feel you're going through a tough time right now, is realize you are not alone and you have a gift to give. And so find whatever it is you're passionate about. If you're passionate about making sure, if you don't have health care, that everybody has health care, then join up with other people that want health care, and maybe that's your calling. If you're passionate about what's going on with children in the world or relationships improving or whatever, find whatever it is that you most deeply long for, even if you're lacking it right now, and find a way to serve. It's that simple. There are tons of people out there that feel the same as you. There are lots of people out there that need what you have to give. And service is how spirit primarily wants us to live. And when we serve and when we love, we find the people we're meant to serve. And they are so appreciative, just like you on this show. they're so appreciative of your offering that they just want to reciprocate. They want to give back.
Right. You're so true, because I think I've mentioned on several of my other shows that people ask me, what are you getting out of doing this show? I'm like, what am I getting? I'm serving. I'm meeting fantastic people. My life is radically changing. I'm doing it in love. And so in my personal life, it's the law of Einstein, which he calls the boomerang effect. It's just coming back to me again and again and again.
Mm-hmm,
and so
mm-hmm.
loving and serving is really, really important. And so where do you see your life going now, Lisa? What are you going to be doing next?
Well, I'm not able to say yet, but I hope so. In about a month or two, the things just fell into my lap, my way. A company that I worked with in the past that I helped to found, things are just suddenly revitalizing, re-resurrecting that company, and it's flowing really, really easily. It has to do with writing. It has
right.
to do with teaching and coaching. And it also has to do with radio, which I've done in the past myself. And so I keep working on recreating that company because there seems to be a calling for it again. So I'm looking at getting that moving again, and then people will have an opportunity to learn more about that probably within a month or two. I'll be announcing on my website, et cetera. I continue to teach and coach and share the passion of my book. And one of the biggest things about my passion is the kind of world we can recreate right now if we consider wealth to be a simplification for those of us that have lots and lots and lots of stuff, a simplification of our needs, because we desire everybody in the world to have the basics, basic health care, basic food, clothing, shelter. And if we see that as what it means to be a success, instead of, you know, one thing disappointed me about Slumdog Millionaire. I liked the movie a lot, a great deal, but the emphasis was, and then he became a millionaire. Yippee. There is nothing wrong with becoming a millionaire, but that is secondary to the kind of person we become.
Right.
And the message to me is he loved that girlfriend, and he was a survivor, and he learned how to overcome, and he learned how to be a loving person. Thank God he became a millionaire. Instead of what we tend to do, especially in this United States culture, is it doesn't matter what kind of person you are, just become a millionaire. That will solve all your problems. No, that won't. What will solve your problems is the kind of person you are. And then the money you attract will help you make a better world. And
right.
that's the kind of shift I see that it's happening, and it's going to be so exciting if we make that shift, and we can make that shift. So that's a huge passion of mine, is to encourage people to understand that's the shift that's coming.
Well, you talked about recreating yourself. How can people begin to recreate themselves besides shifting their consciousness, finding out maybe what they're really passionate about, what their calling is? Is there anything else that you can think about how they can really begin to recreate themselves?
If they already have the means and they already have loving people and an abundance of all that in their lives, just continue to find ways to serve and expand your service. Expand your awareness of what's going on in the world. Now, do that in the following ways. You know, if you are too much in your fear or your anger or your sorrow, you have too much emotional heaviness to deal with, then shut off news and don't try and do what I'm saying. You need to just work on healing yourself and lifting your vibration. But if you are in the space where you can serve and love, become aware of what's needed around the world, of what's going on around the world, and commit yourself to being an agent of change, big ways or small. You know, Mother Teresa was once asked how it is that she became the saintly person that she was.
Right.
And she just kind of dismissed that and said, you know what, I just focus on helping and loving one person at a time.
Right. I understood that the need was so overwhelming that she would not even look up. She would just hold the child in her arms and put all of her energy and all of her spirit on that one child, and then she would go to the next child. Because she said if she looked up, it would be too many children and too many needs. And so that's a great idea. I have another question for you from the chat room, Lisa, that they want to know quickly. that they've been married for 25 years and they're going through a divorce, and how can this woman, she said, how can I joyfully go through this divorce and recreate my life? I don't know if you can go through a divorce joyfully. I know I did.
Yes, yes. Visualize as much as possible the happy ending for you both. You know, and you may have those feelings when you're in your own fear, you know, of am I going to have a happy life after this? You may want to move into some sort of anger or something like that. You know, the gift of anger is just simply wanting respect. And so imagine that at some point the two of you are going to have peace, that the two of you are going to understand why you went through what you did. The two of you are going to learn your lessons. The two of you are going to have an ability where you can be friends and you can sit down if you have children at a wedding or something and look at each other and say, ah, I have that with my ex-husband. And if you read the book Soul Success, you know, the
right.
kinds of things I went through, you'll read about. I have that with him. I have, my heart is open and loving and just compassionate towards him. Get a group of support around you, because divorce, especially divorce anger, is some of the most intense anger that there can be. Find a way to protect your children from it, because they have only one need, to love you both and to be loved in return. So those are some practical suggestions I can have for working with divorce and trying to get through it and attracting at the highest level of getting through.
Okay, one, your last book, and we have about 3 minutes, Meditation, The Path to Peace. Share with our listeners, what is meditation and how can they begin to practice it?
I cannot survive without meditation. It is, along with music, the two things, and I guess love, three things I need most in my life.
Do you meditate every day?
Oh, every day, okay. Definitely. There are many different kinds of meditation and ways to meditation, but basically it means to put your mind into a state where you can listen. You can listen to spirit, you can listen to others, you can listen to the heart of yourself and others and of God. That's the simplest way I can do it. Prayer can become meditation when we move from the asking side, which is good, I pray to the listening side, to where spirit is able to talk to us in the voice of silence and just whisper to us. Often, sometimes it's a big bang, but most often it's a whisper. Here's what you need. Here, I love you. I care for you. I don't want you in the suffering. I want you free and in a state of joy. Here's how to get there. Mm-hmm. So getting our emotions calm and our thoughts quiet enough so that we truly listen to what God or Spirit is wanting from us in times of crisis and change, so that, you know, we can grab the hand of God and be led. Meditation is a deeply humbling experience. It's saying, I don't have the answers. It's almost the anti-law of attraction sometimes. I surrender, align, and contribute, and beyond the secret. I surrender, and I say, you know what? I don't even know what to attract. I don't know what to think. I don't know what you want from me, because my life is just making no sense to me right now. Okay, I'm not going to try and act like I know and use the law of attraction to trick myself out of this. God, I surrender. Reveal to me what you want from me right now.
Okay,
that's
we have
meditation.
1 minute, Lisa. Share with our listeners how they can reach you, what's your website, how can they get your book, et cetera.
The best way to get to find out about me and my books is to go to drlisalove.com. You can either spell it out, drlisalove.com, or you can also do drlisalove.com. And also, people often are surprised. If you fill in an email and send it to me, it drops into my BlackBerry. Do put your phone number, because it's faster for me to give you a call than to respond to your email, because I'm often busy or on the road or something, and it's just easier for me to pick up a phone and call you. People are surprised. They just send me an email and boom, they get a phone call all of a sudden. So just give me your phone number.
Well, good. Thank you so much, Dr. Lisa Love, for sharing with us. You shared some really fantastic, phenomenal information, and I always say that I'm asking people to just sort of listen to this again, and what sort of jumps out to you into your spirit, that may be the one missing piece to your puzzle that you need, and just begin to meditate on that, get that in your spirit, and then begin to take small baby steps toward change. And I just want to thank you, Lisa, for joining me and sharing that great information. And this is Constance Arnold with the Think, Believe, and Manifest talk show saying to you that truly when you change your thinking and when you change your believing, that indeed all things are possible. Looking forward to being with you again next week, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Thank you so much for joining me, and have a great and fantastic week. Lisa?
Thanks for joining us today on Think, Believe, and Manifest. We'll be back next week with another.